You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Tony Boselli, he was a Hall of Fame finalist for the fifth consecutive year, a top 10 finalist. He was also on the sidelines for Westwood One's coverage of Super Bowl 55 in Tampa. And Tony joins us now. Tony, thanks for joining us. Let me start with you being a great offensive lineman, watching what Kansas City's strategy was with their offensive line and why that seemed like there were very little adjustments there during the game against that Tampa front four.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I mean, and doesn't it just highlight the fact that I don't care how good your quarterback is, if you can't block people up front, you have no chance. I mean, it reminded me watching that game back to the 18-0 Patriots, and they were the most explosive offense we've ever seen. And four guys from the Giants ruined the entire game, and because they couldn't block them. And I was surprised, though, at Kansas City that they didn't do more stuff horizontally, getting the ball out of his hand quickly early in that game. All year we've seen them with the wide receiver screens. We've seen them with jet sweeps, kind of getting horizontal, and we saw very little of that. And I think they put a lot of stress on that offensive line early that was unneeded. And at the end of the day, when they got behind, they just couldn't hold up. So it's tough going in. They had basically three guys playing. Backup left tackle, who's really their backup right tackle. They're starting right guard, backup. Now he's the backup right tackle, and you bring up your backup right guard. So it's three positions that are weakened. I mean, that's hard to overcome. And I'm just surprised that Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy didn't have a better plan to protect those guys.
I still think they were loading up for the big play, Tony, that they didn't take, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was averaging 6 yards per carry. I thought that they could run the football. And the defense that Tampa's playing, I mean, you know, their safeties were so deep. You got to see that in person. They're basically saying, you guys want the dink and dunk? Go ahead. We're just not going to let you get behind us here. Why wouldn't you just... why wouldn't you take what they were giving you, as we always love to say?
You know, we were saying it on the broadcast. I have no idea, because if you look at the first matchup in the first quarter when Tyreek Hill had 200 yards, Todd Bowles was aggressive, playing a lot of man coverage, coming after him, and they were getting just skewered. They had no chance. Todd Bowles made adjustments. Coming in, I think he knew they could get pressure with four. So we're going to rush four. We're going to play two high safeties, we'll play some man underneath with two high safeties. And he's basically saying, we will not get beat today deep. If you want to dink and dunk us, if you want to run, if you have the discipline to do that, so be it. But we know we can rush with four, and we know that you're not going to beat us deep. And I still do not understand why they didn't run the ball more, and I don't understand why didn't they test the perimeter with all their speed and just get the ball out of Patrick's hands. Because once you do that, you then could have forced Todd Bowles out of what he wanted to do, force him to drop that extra safety, force him to play up, and be more aggressive to stop the dink and dunk, then the shot is there over the top. But to your point, it felt like from the beginning they said, we want the big play, and it just wasn't there.
And also you have Mahomes with a bad toe, and he ran for over 400 yards just scrambling. And I thought the defensive philosophy was, let's go up the middle, and let's make him run a little bit here. Let's, you know, we're going to test his athleticism, his greatness here, and it just... It, you know, Tyreek Hill drops the ball. Kelsey drops the ball. It felt like they started to panic a little bit, Tony.
Well, if that's a guy with a bad turf toe that needs surgery, he's still bad. Can I get two of those turf toes? My goodness. I mean, he's making plays I've never seen. He's parallel to the line of scrimmage, throwing the ball 20 yards down the field. And by the way, I think it hit Williams in the hands and it was dropped. I mean, there was a number of plays that if they just make them, we might have a different outcome or a much closer game. There was no juice either, Dan, was the other thing. I was on that Chiefs sidelines. You know, early there was some excitement. As soon as it started going against them, there was no juice at all. It felt like the air was let out of the balloon and they didn't have the answer for the test. And I thought it was because I was waiting the whole time. We said it. I'm waiting for when they say enough's enough. Let's get going. Let's go fast. Let's get the ball out of our hands and go and use our speed. They never did it. And give Tampa credit, because they couldn't block those four guys up front. I mean, it got worse and worse. It was like an avalanche just coming on top of them. And by the time you got mid to late third quarter, I don't think they had any answers.
He's Tony Boselli, the Jaguars radio color analyst and former Pro Bowl offensive lineman. How easy is it to block for Brady?
I think it's easier than block. I think it's easier to block for Brady than Mahomes, because you know where he is at all time. all times. He's very, he gets the ball out quick, and he's great at working up into the pocket. So as an offensive tackle, you love that because it really takes away, you can take away the angles. Like if you want to go rush up the field, that's fine. I'm going to take away the power. I'm going to take away inside, and it helps you a lot. He's spectacular. And I think the other thing, and Mahomes has this as well, Dan, anytime as an offensive lineman, you have confidence in the guy behind you, it just makes everything easier. It makes you play better. You just know that something good is going to happen. And both those guys have that quality. And it's I guarantee it's a lot of fun to play for both.
Well, Brady could step up in the pocket, Tony. Mahomes could not step up in the pocket all night long.
Well, he could have, I think, at times, Dan. This is where I think if you watch the tape, there's, and this happens all the time, and Kurt Warner and I talked about it. Mahomes will just start backing up, even when the right move is to step up. It's his habit. He has some of the worst footwork I've ever seen, but he's so talented, he gets away with it. I mean, he can throw off any platform. There's no one else in the league who can do what he does. And a lot of times where you're saying, hey, step up and work the pocket, he's like, I'm just going to back up and buy myself time because I can throw it with the flick of my wrist 70 yards. And so he does – he's very unconventional. I don't think you want to change it because he's so dang good. But – you know, there were, now to your point, there were also times he had no chance to step up because I thought the untold story that we didn't really focus on, I mean, people are talking about it because JPP and Shaq Barrett got all the attention, but Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea were just bullies in the middle, and they really did press the pocket, to your point.
And you're on the Chiefs sidelines. I was watching the game last night, rewatching it. It felt like these penalties really got to them, that like they were taking that to the sidelines, whether it was Jones or it was Honey Badger. And I don't know, they were getting caught up in smaller details instead of a larger picture here. What was it like on the sidelines with that?
Well, I was, you know, we weren't actually on the side. We're at that moat, you know, moat area right before. So I was like, we're like 2 feet. I was right by the defensive line, actually, right behind Chris Jones and that group. And there was a lot of chirping back and forth. And there was a lot of, at times, people, players having to stand between players. Not that it was going to be a fist fight or anything, but there was hollering back and forth. You could see the frustration. At one point, I think late in the second quarter, I mean, Steve Spagnuolo came over and got the entire defense together and spent about 5 minutes kind of trying to get everyone to calm down, everyone to get on the same page. And I do think those penalties hurt them. But if you go watch them all year, Dan, they're an aggressive group. They get their hands on receivers, and sometimes you don't get away with it. They didn't get away with it on Super Bowl Sunday.
Well, how big do you think how legit do you think those penalties were in the first half?
I think most of them were right. The one that I thought was interesting was that last drive right before the half is the pass interference on Honey Badger. I thought Brady was throwing that away. I mean, it wasn't even in the same zip code. It was so high. There's no one catching that. And so, if it's not a catchable ball and there's no chance of a play being made, I'm not sure why they called pass interference there. That would be the one I was a little bit like, huh. With that said, that drive I don't think ever should have got down there. I was surprised that Andy Reid – I understood the first timeout he called at the end of the half. The second time after they got 8 yards, it was 3rd and 2. Why are you calling timeout there? Because if they get that 2 yards, now all of a sudden you are at risk of giving up points. And the way the half was going, I just thought, you know what? After they got the 8 yards, let this thing run out, force Bruce Arians to use a timeout, force him to do it. So I didn't like that decision-making process, and I didn't like that one call because I thought the ball was not even close to being catchable.
Top 10 finalist for the fifth consecutive year. You know what? The party will be even better, Tony, once it happens.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, I always get to this point, Dan, is you look at it. I mean, how are you going to say anything bad about the five guys that got in there? I mean, Charles Woodson, Peyton Manning, Calvin Johnson, Faneca, and Lynch. They're all great players. And so, yeah, would I like to be there? Absolutely. But never take anything away from them. And I always say, you know, maybe it's supposed to be in L.A. I went to SC, you know, maybe, you know, it'd be even better being out kind of where I went to college and got this whole thing started. So we'll see how it works out. One thing that has taught me about 2020, Dan, don't worry about tomorrow because it can change quickly. Just enjoy where you're at. So hopefully it happens in the near future, and hopefully next year, 2022 is the year.
Thank you, buddy. Thanks for all your access here during the year. We appreciate your time as always.
Dan, anytime. Really appreciate having me.
That's Tony Boselli. He does the Jags radio color analyst and former Jags offensive lineman. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. He's Russell Wilson Jr. III, honored with the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. Also, he and his wife, Sierra, are on the cover of GQ, which hits the newsstands February 23rd. Good morning, Russ. How are you?
Dan, what's up, man? It's always great being on the show. How you been?
Where's the trophy?
Oh, man, the trophy is on its way right here. It's going to be sitting somewhere over here somewhere. It's heavy, though, man. It's like 75 pounds. I was lifting it up. You know? I'd use both hands.
Okay, is that your library?
Yeah, this is my office, yeah.
Okay. What do you have in it? What's the coolest thing you have in your office?
I got some good books here. Let's see here.
Have you read those books?
I haven't read them all, no. But the coolest thing I have in my office, man, I got some cool awards. I have this Lombardi Award that I won last year. That was pretty cool. I got some other cool things in here. I'm not going to say too much. I don't want somebody breaking in.
You should do a book club like Andrew Luck.
No book clubs for me right now.
What'd you think of the Super Bowl?
Man, I thought, first of all, the fact that we were able to get this far, you know, with everything going on with COVID and everything else, and for us to be there, I was sitting there watching the game, and it was pretty fascinating to just see, you know, all year we had no fans. So it was fascinating to see actually people there, the experience of it all. It felt real. But in terms of the game, you know, I think that Tom got up early, you know, and they threw a few touchdowns early on, the reality is they couldn't block those guys on the other end. You know, they struggled with, you know, Patrick was running for his life the whole game, it felt like.
But I didn't understand why Kansas City didn't make adjustments with that offensive line, right? At halftime, don't you make adjustments to something like that?
Yeah, you know, I think they needed to adjust a little bit quicker in the game. And then next thing you know, the Bucks were already up, you know, pretty good, you know, in the first half, you know. So I think they were trying to catch up. You know, they're always trying to play catch-up mode in that game. And, you know, obviously when you got guys like Tyreek running down the field and Kelsey. But I felt like they moved the ball in certain moments, but then they kind of got froze, you know, kind of stuck in the middle of the field. So that's where they had some problems.
But also, and Patrick Mahomes has mentioned this, he's trying for the big play and not taking what the defense gives you. Like, do you understand that? And you probably went through this year where you guys were getting the big play, but you weren't getting other things.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that, you know, they have to be able to do is, you know, they had to slow those guys down up front for Patrick to be able to, you know, go through his reads. It looked like as soon as he kind of was hitting his back foot sometimes, and then other times, you know, they were trying to take shots down the field, you know. But I think that they didn't adjust great, but also, too, it didn't seem like they could handle the guys up front.
Does Brady do anything that you can't do?
Does he do anything that I can't do?
Yeah.
No, I don't think he does anything I can't do. You know, I think that he does everything extremely well. He's got great players. I mean, I was looking at the pregame warmups, right? And I'm watching the pregame warmups, and I'm seeing Gronkowski, I'm seeing Godwin, Evans, Antonio Brown, you know, they got Fournette. They got all these players around them. I mean, watching Antonio Brown on that deep hinge stop route that he ran 25 yards, boom, stopped on a dime. You'd have Gronkowski. I thought Leftwich called a great game and got Gronkowski open early in the game and got him open. That was really cool down in the red zone, some of the stuff they were doing. And I think that they made their plays, you know, when they really needed to, in that game.
Does Mahomes do anything you can't do?
No, man. I think that he can launch it long ways down the field. But I think I can do everything out there. You know, he's a really special player, though, man. I love watching him. I love watching his competitive drive. You know, the game was kind of out of hand there. He just kept going for it, which I loved watching him go for it. You know, even though it didn't turn out the way he wanted it to, he's going to be a heck of a player for a long time.
How much input should the quarterback have in organizational moves, veteran quarterback?
Yeah, I think it depends on who it is. You know, I think.
Well, how about you? How much do you have any say in what Seattle does offensively with free agents or draft picks?
I think that it's, you know, I think that ultimately for me personally, I think that I want to be able to be involved, because at the end of the day, it's your legacy. It's your team's legacy. It's, you know, it's the guys you get to go into the huddle with. And at the end of the day, that those guys you got to trust, you know, when you think about, you know, one of the reasons why Tom went to Tampa was because he felt like he could trust those guys and Bruce was going to give him an opportunity. I think for, you know, every situation, you have to be able to go into a situation. You know, you think about guys like LeBron, he was able to, you know, be around great players that he can trust. I think for me, you know, anytime you bring free agents in, you know, other players, you want the best players, guys who love the game, guys you want to be a part of that. And as a player, you kind of know that. You get to be around Pro Bowls, you get to kind of see these guys, you get to be in the huddle with the linemen or receivers, or, you know, get to be around defensive guys. And so you kind of build that over time and get to see who can really play. You know, as a player, you really know. So I think that relationship's really key, and that dialogue between, you know, especially being a veteran player, you know, that dialogue is really important.
Yeah, but that's a long-winded way of not answering my question. Are you involved in personnel decisions? Have you been involved in personnel decisions?
Not as much. I don't, you know, I think that, you know, for
do you
for me,
want to be involved, Russ?
Yeah, I think it helps. I think it helps to be involved more. But I think that dialogue should happen more often, in my opinion.
Yeah, but look, I'm worried about these numbers. You've been sacked 394 times in your career. So you're going to be the most sacked quarterback in the history of the game. Why?
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, sometimes you hold on to it a little bit, you know, just because you're looking for that plague and you find those guys. But also so many times it turns into touchdowns too. But, you know, you never want to be sacked that many times. You know, 400 times up basically is way too many, 400 too many. You know, so I think that's a big thing that we got to fix. That's got to be fixed, you know, and has to be, you know, at the end of the day. Because my goal is to play, you know, 10 to 15 more years. And so when you think about that and longevity and legacy and all that, you know, you watched the game the other night, you know, the difference between that game was, you know, Tom was taking shots down the field and getting the ball, you know, to his guys and stuff like that. But, you know, he wasn't touched really. He got touched. I think he got sacked one time in the game, you know, early on, but, you know, throughout the
And this doesn't even count, Russ, how many times you were hit. I mean, that's 394 sacks. Like, that's a lot. And like,
I think you also get away quite a bit too, you know. I get away some too.
You do, but that's a lot, but, though.
I think that, you know, we got to get better up front. I think that, and it's not just passing. I think, you know, in terms of everything you do, you know, it controls the game, as you watched the other night. I think, you know, and, you know, obviously guys like Dwayne are such amazing players, and, you know, to have him come in was a big thing that I really wanted to make sure that happened. I think that we all wanted to make sure that it happened because we knew that what a great player Dwayne was, for example. So, you know, and so I think that, you know, throughout the next 10 years, it's really important for me personally, but also just, you know, throughout, you know, my career, that, you know, we make sure that we do everything we can, including myself, do everything we can to make sure that doesn't happen.
We're talking to Russell Wilson. What do you make of CBS Jason Lockenforce saying that Seattle had gotten, you know, calls for possible, you know, trade talks with you? Do you believe that Seattle has gotten calls?
Yeah, I definitely believe they've gotten calls for sure. I mean, I think that, you know, I think anytime you're, a player that, you know, tries to produce every week and has done it for, you know, consistently, I think people are going to call for sure. And I think it's part of the process.
Yeah, but you're a franchise quarterback. You're a Hall of Fame quarterback. You're not available, are you?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm available or not. That's a Seahawks question. But I think more than anything else is, you know, I think at the end of the day, you want to win. You know, I play this game every day to wake up to win. You play this game, you know, to be the best in the world. You know, I hate? I hate sitting there watching other guys play the game. It's nothing worse.
By the way, you looked miserable at the Super Bowl watching.
Yeah,
there's
a picture. There's a picture of Sierra and Roger talking. I'm sitting there just, I'm watching this game, like, you know, wishing that I was in there playing. So, you know, I think that, you know, ultimately you watch the games and you want to do everything you can to be there. That's why we play this game, you know? And so I think that part of it's really key. And I think that, you know, the reality of professional sports is, you know, things happen, things change. I I'm not sure, you know, how long I'll play in Seattle. I think hopefully it was going to be forever, you know, but things change obviously along the way. And I think that, you focus on what you can control every day and try to be the best version of yourself and, you know, ultimately try to win championships. And I think that's, you know, that's why I play this game.
What's the cover on GQ? What's it look like with you and your wife?
You know, it just came out this, I think it's just coming out here this morning, or it's coming out soon here, but, I think it'll look good. I think you'll like it. And Dan, I know you and C have that good relationship. I know you guys are really close.
We're not that close that much anymore. You know, once you got married, so I had to be respectful. So, I mean,
you backed up.
Yeah. I mean, I backed away and I was respectful.
I got you.
Where is she right now?
I think she's with the kids right now. It's early on the east, on the West Coast. So
it's only, you know, it's 7:30. I mean, she still looks great. Can she do a drive-by? Can you just say, hey, C, can you come in here and say hello to Dan?
She's on the other side of the house. She's with, I think, Lil Wynn right now.
Wait, how big is the house?
I don't know. It's big enough.
It's not like a two-bedroom apartment that you're in, right?
No, we're not a two-bedroom.
What are you doing in the off-season?
Man, just getting ready. I think, you know, every day you try to get ready, try to get prepared. We have a pretty cool business too called Limitless Minds. That's growing like crazy. I think you've talked to Trevor before. You know, it's that business. My brother Harry, DJ, that business is growing. We're working with some of the best companies in the world. We have the House of LRNC from a business standpoint too. That's really growing with Christine Day. She was the former CEO of Lululemon, and me and Sierra and Christine are, and the rest of the team, we're running that business. And so it's good because I don't have to focus on that every day. You know, I have a great team, like people like Christine and
but what is that
Harry
business
and,
though, Russ? What is it?
Our fast line. So we have Good Man Brand, which is our clothing line, which has been massive and it's been growing like crazy. And the Good Man Brand, we give 3% back to the Why Not You Foundation. We give all those proceeds to the Friends of the Children. It's an amazing program, and it's a great clothing line. It's a great shoes, everything you could want to wear. I can run a 40-yard dash in these pants, I'm telling you. And then we also have Human Nation that's underneath the House of LRNC. So imagine
how fast do you run the 40-yard dash?
Well, I'm a guy that can run way faster than you, Dan. That's for sure.
Well, I know that, but I hope so. But what do you run the 40 now?
Well, I'm probably a low 4.5 guy right now. I'm more quick than fast though. Like the awareness of being like get in and out of things, I think is what's key, especially playing my position, because you're in small movements, right? So you're getting in and out of the pocket. You're sliding to the right, sliding to the left, spinning out. So I think that's what I really concentrate on. But you know, right now in this time of year, it's really just trying to get ready for the season, and you know, trying to, you know, get prepared and trying to be the best version of yourself.
How are the kids?
Man, Future's growing up fast. You know, he's getting ready for all these sports and stuff like that, trying to be safe as possible. And he's getting tall and fast and athletic. And then you have Sienna, who's, you know, she knows everything. She's going to run for president one day, I'm sure. and then you have Wynn, who's, you know, 6 months, who, you know, is getting ready to, I feel like he's going to run before he ever walks. So he's ready to roll. So the kids are great. It's the best part of, you know, after the season, you really get to, you know, spend time with your kids and balance all that out.
You know, quarterbacks hate 3 and out, but are you 3 and out? That's it? 3 kids?
Oh, I'm pushing C for more. She wants to have more too, but we'll see what happens.
Go for it on fourth down is what I would do if I were you. Don't tell her I said that. Congrats on the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, and it's a great honor. And I don't know if it hit you what it meant to you. Can you describe it?
Yeah, man. My whole life, you know, my dad used to talk about Walter Payton and what a man he was, the legacy that he lived and everything else. And I think, you know, my dad not being here anymore, I think the reality is that, you know, to be able to serve and give back, it's the greatest gift, you know, in the world, you know. And I think that whenever I got in Seattle in 2012, I wanted to be able to serve and give back to the community and everything else. So that's been something that I've been super passionate about. I've met almost 1,000 some kids in Seattle Children's Hospital. We've been able to do so many cool things with, you know, pediatric cancer, with our Why Not You Foundation, and Why Not You Foundation doing so many things with, you know, Ride United program this offseason and everything else that we've been able to do along the way, especially with COVID that's happened, and I'm a voter campaign, and just, it's been a journey, you know, it's been a journey, especially in 2020 with all the people that we've lost, you know, all the people that you care about and all the people that we've gotten to know that have experienced different things. Also all the things going on racially in America. It was important for me and C to get involved and to, you know, even to partner up with, you know, Wheels Up to do Meals Up with Kenny Dichter. It was a blessing to be able to give back and just really try to make a difference as much as we could. And so, you know, I think that I told C, you know, the cool part is it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning of really being able to make a difference. And hopefully we can continue to do that along the way.
I think your dad went to McLovin's alma mater. Your dad went to Dartmouth?
He did, yeah.
McLovin went to Dartmouth. Yeah. I don't know what that means. I mean, your dad was an athlete and McLovin wasn't. Did Dartmouth recruit you?
They did, actually. Buddy Tevens, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Buddy Tevens. I went up to Dartmouth. Went up there, I don't know, I was probably 10th grade or something like that. And my cousin was actually playing basketball. She was playing basketball at University of Penn. So I went up there, everything else. And Buddy Tevens, you know, my dad and Buddy Tevens were really close, actually. They had a really good relationship. My dad played football and baseball there and everything. And so I went there, beautiful camp. I mean, there's so much snow. It was probably 12 feet of snow when I went up there. I was like, I'm not coming here. But anyways, you know, my dad, he loved Dartmouth, the Big Green, you know. And so that was always fun to be up there. My Uncle Ben and everything else, we had a good time.
Hey, good to talk to you. Have a good off season, and we'll stay in touch and tell your wife I said hello.
Okay, boss. I'll good seeing you, man. McLovin, see you later, bud.
Whoa, all right. You imagine, could Russ have started for Dartmouth there, McLovin?
You know, I was there with Jay Fiedler, who made the NFL.
Yeah.
So it would have been interesting.
Yeah.
I think Russ might have made the cut.
I don't know. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. Patrick Mahomes will undergo surgery tomorrow to repair a torn plantar plate in his foot, also known as turf toe. The rehab will be for several months. The rehab for Nick Wright will be for several years, perhaps, after what happened with the Kansas City Chiefs. And Nick Wright, now known as Nick Wrong this week, co-host of First Things First on Fox Sports 1, joins us on the program. Refresh my memory. What were you saying about the Chiefs on Friday going into the Super Bowl?
Oh, I don't know if you actually need your memory refreshed, Dan. I saw the beginning of yesterday's show. You seem to remember it vividly. Just a day ago, I had the shocking take that the Chiefs would win. I had the shocking take that the best offense in the league over the last 3 years would continue to function. And I was wrong. And, you know, I understand that this is the first time in your, what is it at this point, 65-year broadcasting career that you've ever had someone have an incorrect prediction. So I'm surprised a little bit at the level you're reveling in it. But, yeah, I was wrong. I was wrong, Dan.
Wait, that sounded snarky, Nick. Are you being snarky?
No. I wouldn't be snarky. I would never be snarky when, you know, a broadcast Hall of Famer leads his show the day after the Super Bowl, potentially the most listened to viewed day of your entire year, within 18 seconds at calling me what I was called as a third grader. I understand this show does traffic in pedantic childhood humor. We're just, you know, a few steps above flatulence jokes on this television radio program. But I thought Nick Wrong, you know, so you could have changed Nick too. There's a name that rhymes with. You could have gone for the whole boat there if you wanted to change my name, mess with my name to lead your show the day after the Super Bowl. That's fine. Wait. That's the type of broadcasting you do.
Wait, were you called Dick Wrong in grade school?
I hope you get fined for that.
What?
I hope right now Fritzy and Pauly and all the guys are nervous because you're doing things you shouldn't do.
Wait, could I get in trouble for saying that Dick Allen was a great player or Dick Ebersol is one of the great TV executives? How about I call you Richard Wrong?
You know what? Why did I come on? Why do I do this?
Because you're a good sport. That's why. You're a good sport. When did you
know? Unlike, you know who's not a good sport? that Tom Brady taunting people and then writing apology notes afterwards. You know who's not a good sport? That Antoine Winfield Jr. Antoine Winfield Sr. would never do what he did. He's like, oh, Tyreek did it to me. Tyreek, when he was running into the end zone in week 12, was wishing peace be upon you, as you're taught in, you know, Catholic school growing up. It was a very different scenario than what Antoine Winfield Jr. did.
When did you know that you were in trouble? Your Chiefs were in trouble?
Well, around the time Fritzy texted me to make sure I would come on this week, even though the game wasn't over. That wasn't a good sign.
Wait, did he book you during the game?
During the game. He was like, if this result holds, excited to have you on.
Todd,
I sent him a text at halftime.
I told you not to do that.
I couldn't control myself. It was like 21, whatever the score was, it was a blowout.
Nick, I did tell Fritzy to wait.
You did.
And you, why did you do that?
I sent him a note at halftime just to make sure that
if this holds up,
we'll see you Monday.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I apologize for that. I'm going to say it. I'm not going to text you. I apologize, okay?
Well, I appreciate that. That was sent during halftime. I hear the weekend had a good performance. I can't confirm it because I was pacing around my neighborhood, chain smoking Black and Milds, trying to figure out what I was angriest about. Was I angriest about the new definition of pass interference that applied to these playoffs, which is Tom Brady incompletions? Was I angriest about Andy Reid, who I adore, just deciding to just continue to taunt Tom Brady with the timeouts? What are you doing calling these timeouts? Or was I angriest about the fact that what might have been the single greatest pass I've ever seen Patrick Mahomes throw on a 3rd and 11 with a man in his face and a man behind him bounced off Tyreek's face mask? And I didn't know what I was angriest about. But then I decided, no, I'm angriest at Todd Fritz. That's who I'm angry.
Okay,
at.
Hold on. Todd, what?
He's conveniently leaving out his response to that text where he goes on to say, I am going to frame this text and hang it up on the wall or something along those lines after the Chiefs come back and win.
Whoa!
Because I was too premature to call it a game.
Okay. All right. I respect the confidence. It was, you know, misplaced, naive, but, right. You know.
It's good to know. You know what? You learn something new every day, and it's good to know. Because I learned yesterday that this show is the place for juvenile humor. Yes. And I learned today that Todd Fritz is a man that's going to share private texts. That was not for publication. I thought that was between Todd and I. You think everyone has my cell phone number, Todd? I invited you to that circle. And now I'm going to have to change it or just block.
No. See, this is what happens.
When did you start thinking about me on Sunday?
Well, I was thinking about a lot on Sunday, Dan. I was thinking about the fact that, you know, I've always heard that kids that have to pay their way through college are more successful. Like they and I'm like, well, that'll be good for my kids because now I can't pay for it. So I thought about that. I was thinking about the fact that, do you realize the perfect storm of events that had to happen for this? Like, it's one thing for a guy for many years to say, I think Tom Brady is finished. And my saving grace on that is, you know who agreed with me? Bill Belichick, because he waved him goodbye. Bill Belichick's like, you know what, that Nick Wright, he has some good takes. I like those statistical graphs pointing down. We'll wave bye to Tom Brady. And it's another thing for me to be like, hey, this guy Mahomes, he's the most talented player I've ever seen in my life, and the Chiefs are going to win 3 in a row. But the fact that during the life of those takes, it was never a possibility that Brady could beat Mahomes in a Super Bowl. So they played in the same conference. But then he had to leave. The Chiefs had to make another Super Bowl. Brady had to somehow get there. And then it had. So I was just thinking, like, this is the Randy Johnson's fastball that killed the dove of, like, perfect storm of suck for these takes to all collide. And I'm the dove. And Tom Brady's the fastball. I'm so mad. And you're so happy.
No, but I like how you try to do kind of an end run. And you said to Fritzy, hey, did Dan pick the Chiefs? And then Fritzy had to tell you, no, I picked the Buccaneers. Nick.
What? Fritzy? All right, Fritzy.
What a rat. I'm such a rat.
You.
What's happening?
Private test.
I can send you nothing now.
I've lost trust.
irrevocably. I really did think you picked the Chiefs.
No.
I've had to pivot.
I had the under too, Nick. I had the under in the Buccaneers.
Do you guys have a fancy social media team?
Yeah.
If you really wanted to stick it to me, what you could have put up was my tweet with the 11 prop bets I made before the game.
And you missed them all, didn't you?
I went 0-11.
That's hard to do.
Not only is it hard to do, my friend, let me tell you something. As someone, a seasoned gambler, when you make 11 bets, if you're a responsible gambler, you think worst case scenario. You're like, all right, what if I go 3-for-8? If I'm minus 5 units plus the VIG, can I stomach it? You're like, okay, I can bet in the right amount.
Yeah.
You don't budget 0-for-11. It's not even a concept, because 2-for-9, you're only minus 7 units. You're like, that hurts. 0-for-11, Dan, you don't consider. I bet over 38.5 yards for the Chiefs' shortest punt. So over 38.5 yards for the shortest punt, with the logic being they're not going to punt inside the 40. It was a sharp bet. I was like, I am on the right side of this. That long-haired hippie punter we have shanked that sucker off one side and then shanked it off the other side. He had 2 28-yard punts. God, sorry if I called you a hippie.
And by the way, get Nick Wright, @getNickWright. That's your Twitter.
Yeah, that's my
Twitter. We just found out that @getDickWrong is available. Now, do you want us to grab, Paulie, would you grab that?
Yeah, I'll grab it for Nick. that. Dick Wrong.
No, @getDickWrong.
Oh, my bad.
Yes, okay.
You guys are really enjoying this.
Yeah. Hey, you're coming off great. We might not, but you're coming off great, okay?
Thanks. I'm financially insolvent.
Out and bought a beautiful red blazer.
Yeah. Velvet.
Yeah. Velvet blazer.
Custom made.
How much was that blazer?
It was $1,074, Dan.
I would like
to know how I was going to pay for it with all my Chiefs winnings.
All your prop bets, all the punter bets, you were going to pay for your blazer. What? Maybe wear it when the Buccaneers have their parade, their victory parade.
Here's the thing. You want to know something? God, I'm going to share this with you, and then it'll be a final thing to share with you, and then we'll hopefully.
Do you want to text it to Fritzy, and then he'll share it with me?
No, okay. I don't.
Okay.
The store I went into had that red velvet blazer in a slightly different hue of red that I thought was too close to the Bucks color, that instead I saw they had a different piece of clothing in the Chiefs red, and I was like, can you custom make me that blazer in that fabric? He's like, it's going to be like double the price. I'm like, no problem. I've got it. Let's do it. Stupid blazer. It just hangs in my closet and now taunts me. Never to be worn.
Do the Chiefs rebound from this?
Yeah, I might not, but they will. Yeah, they will.
More likely to get back to the Super Bowl next year, Chiefs or Bucks?
I think it's pretty – here's the thing, in all seriousness. I think it's pretty clearly the Chiefs in this regard. There's no one in the AFC that has shown they can beat Mahomes. He's never lost to Josh Allen. He's never lost to Lamar. He's never lost to Baker. The only young, good quarterback that's ever beaten him is Deshaun, and Deshaun's leaving.
Yeah.
Like, I assume leaving the conference. And so I think Herbert is going to be really good, but I don't think they're ready yet. I just think the NFC is so much tougher. Now, Brady's got an easier division now all of a sudden, because Breeze is I think Breeze is done. And so I don't think that division's that good. But the Rams should be good. We know the Seahawks will be good. The Packers will be good. So I just think it's a tougher road. And I think the Chiefs – I'm going to go ahead and say this. I think the Chiefs are better than the Bucks. I understand I have no evidence to prove it, but I think the Chiefs over the course of the season are the better team. And so I think the Chiefs are more likely to be back.
You're a good sport. And thanks for joining us. And we'll talk to you next football season.
Dan, you're okay? Paulie? McLovin, you guys are fine. Fritz, you're going to hear from my attorney.
I have to patch up. I got to get the trust back. Yeah. It's terrible.
Thank you, Nick.
Bye.
All right. That's Nick Wright, Fox Sports 1.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.